This recording is a production of the Conservative Anabaptist Education Committee. This presentation was recorded at Conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute 2022, held at Horizon Mennonite School in Hagerstown, Maryland, on March 4 and 5.
I'm sure you've heard many good things so far. Finances is always close to the top of one of the big issues of running and operating a school. And so the topic for this hour is entitled Money Matters by Vaughn Martin. And he is a local businessman here, a patron at this school. And he also writes out my paycheck. And I've appreciated some of the thinking that he's done about this to make sure that my paycheck is adequate. It's maybe not as fat as some, but it's adequate. And that I really appreciate. So let's give our time to Vaughn here as he discusses money matters.
Good morning. We greet you in the name of Jesus. Money matters. Pretty happy about the title that I have here this morning. It gives me a lot of room to wonder. I hope that doesn't get me in trouble, but it gives me room to dive left and right. And so we're going to talk about this for a while. I am not an accountant. I am not a financial guru. But I tell you, I'm actually thrilled to be speaking on this subject. If I look at all the different subjects we have, this is the only one that I would really want to talk about, to be honest with you. It's the only one maybe could stand a chance of being competent on. All right, so the first thing I want to talk about is a little bit about money reactions that people have. The Rothschilds were some very wealthy Jewish people. They actually grew up in the slums, but they turned into some powerful financiers in the 1700s and the 1800s. They made this statement that said, "Let me issue and control a nation's money, and I care not who makes the laws." Basically, in short, they're saying money equals power, and they know that. It'd be nice if by times that everyone that felt that in their heart and was working their lives that way would be that bold to say it, but typically that's not true. It's a lot more sneakier than that, and it's something that doesn't just affect the wealthy, it also affects people that maybe only have two nickels to rub together too. They realize that money equals power, and it's something that is always being fought against. Christians really need to fight against it. The next reaction that people have about money is it's extremely dangerous. You read your Bible, you saw the warnings, let's just not talk about it. It's extremely dangerous. The next crowd, though, they have this thought, and maybe this affects more of us than not, but money is about equivalent to air. If you have plenty of it, it's nothing to think about. If you're running out of it, it's all you can think about. So hang on to that thought right there, as I'm going to bring it up later. Obviously, we all know that as Christians, the Holy Spirit is here to guide us, to correct and warn our hearts, and to bring us into proper concepts about money. Typically speaking, this is the position of schools: no money, or little to no money. That might be a little bit hard to imagine for some of the treasures that are in this group. And part of the, well, we'll get into that in a little bit, but if you need proof of that, ask your parents. I was talking to an older gentleman about this talk that I had coming up, and he told me this story. They were a church-ran school. He told me this story where he said every year pretty much the offerings would start coming in. They would have just enough as the school towards the end. They'd wind up borrowing money almost, did that for a number of years. Then thankfully, expenses dropped as they went into summer, and then they could pay that off. That is not an uncommon theme. enter 2020, 2021, 2022, and now we have some unprecedented times. We've had extreme government responses. We've had stimulus packages. And if you want an interesting article to read, in the February article of Anabaptist Financial, Richie Lauer speaks to this situation. Missions, churches, they have more money now than they probably ever had. And thankfully, it's been a blessing. It's been flowing into the schools, so if this doesn't feel relevant that you're out of money, it's probably an effect of the government's actions that has created very successful buildings, very successful businesses, and that has flowed into your money coffers. Don't be surprised, though, if this is short-lived. There's always an action and a reaction, and there may be times in the near future where you will have to think harder about money again. Money matters aren't necessarily fun. I've often said that I like paying bills as long as I have money. If you have money to pay bills, it's not a big deal. But it's not always fun. But I remind you, as a school, it's your job. You know, they say adulting is hard. That applies here. Nobody wants to pick up that phone or stop by someone's house and remind a patron that their tuition is behind, or stand up in front of church and tell your church patrons that, you know, we're out of money again. I had a friend who had a childhood memory, and one of the memories that he had was his deacon on a monthly basis almost getting up, we're short on funds again, we're short on funds again. Now I'll have a little bit to say on how you can avoid having that conversation later. This talk is not necessarily a work of rocket science or anything. It's more of a refresher probably in your minds and maybe sort a few things out. But in things like this talk and in times like when you're in your classes or this breakout sessions or whatever, you're just looking for one good idea. One good idea could change your whole situation. I don't profess to have that one good idea, but I'm hoping that maybe you can spark a discussion amongst your board members and you will come up with a good idea, maybe on the way home, maybe through next board meeting. Sometimes things just get stagnant and the obvious is right in front of our nose and we have a really hard time seeing it. So I'm going to break this talk into three sections. I want to talk a little bit about models of organization, ideas about how to fill your budget, and then spending budget, which specifically in this talk, it's more about wages. Before I jump to that, I want to mention two other things. This is a conservative Anabaptist School Board Institute, and there's a common thread that runs throughout this whole crowd. You're private people. You don't talk about how much money you make. You don't talk about how much money you have in the bank. You don't talk about how much money you spend on your car. I mean, if you want to know, you start digging, try to maybe make an analysis, but you're all super private people. And I understand why. I'm not saying that we should change that. You might be afraid of facing criticism, jealousy. There's a whole host of reasons why we are super private about our personal finances. But this is not your business. First of all, it's not a business at all. It is a church community organization. There are some things that I don't really think need talked about as a treasurer with the whole community. I could give you an example of two things offhand. The first one might be payroll. The whole community does not need to know what your school administrator makes. You wouldn't want them to know if they knew what you made, would they? So the same thing applies. It's the golden rule. The second thing might be is a case of, you know, you get a direct donation. It's good to be quiet. But there's lots of things you should be talking about. I mean, you can be talking about rising costs. You can talk about how much money is in the school treasurer. There's lots of things that it is not a private situation. it really doesn't deserve the tight lip that you would give to your personal finances. When you're thinking about rising costs, I'll give you an example of that. The school here runs off of propane. We have some big tanks out back. Well, guess what I was talking about this last fall? We were going into this fall, propane prices were rising substantially. I was worried, you know what I'm saying? We make a budget, but you don't budget doubling costs of propane. So talk about it, get that out there, get your people feeling what you're feeling. They can't help you out if they don't know what your problems are. The second thing I want to talk about is this guy right here. He is an idea guy. Do not harm that guy. Don't beat him up. I had a friend who was a director at an Anabaptist organization, and he told me about one of his board members. It was an older man, and this man was an idea man. I mean, he would fire off ideas. You talk about fundraiser, I mean, he'd have 15 of them just rolling through. Ideas, ideas, ideas. And some of them would come in the form of an email, and he told me they'd be like, they don't even have the formalities. It's just like, hey, here's an idea. And you wouldn't even respond to it. You would just take it. Don't beat that guy up. Be okay with his wild ideas. Many of them are not good. A few of them are, meh. And then every now and again, you get a brilliant one. That is what we're looking for. We're looking for a lot of ideas. You start a conversation, it's a collaboration, and hopefully you come up with one great idea. That was a shameless plug for my type of people. And we do know that we can be annoying by times. Too many ideas and not enough thinking, maybe. All right, moving on. So the first type of school I want to talk about is church schools. These are, in their purest form, they receive only offerings from the church. They're found in Anabaptist communities all across the United States. You start a church plant. There's families with children. We need a school. You start a school, and the first thing you do is you collect an offering. And you're off to the races. The second type of school that you'll find is a patron-ran school. These are, in their purest form, their money comes in solely in tuition or fundraising, and it's normally outside the arm of a specific church and its offerings. These pop up in large Anabaptist communities. You'll find them in central PA, central Ohio, central Indiana. Anywhere there's a lot of churches, you'll find some more of these type of schools. And then you have the last type. It's more of a hybrid. It's a twist between the two. There's a church that supports your school. There may be a few outside patrons that send, possibly even you charge tuition to your own church members in its partial form. I'll be honest, this is where my experience is. That is what Horizon Mennonite School is. It is a hybrid. We are a church-ran school, but then we do offer some schooling to outsiders. As I was talking to different people and asking them how they ran their schools, you'll find that people are pretty pleased with the way they do things, though. Obviously, if they weren't, they would be doing it differently. So as you run across them people, they're pretty happy about the way they do it. Okay, some thoughts about the different types. About types of schools and that type of thing. One blessing that we have is equality of education. And I'm thinking of equality as the state of being equal, specifically in opportunities. I think we underrate this blessing tremendously. It is a huge shift from the world. If you're out in the world and you're poor, you live in poor people housing, you go to poor community schools, and you wind up with a poor education. Likewise, if you're wealthy, we run into people and you talk to people all the time. They choose the communities they live in specifically around the type of schools that they have in their local community, the local district. And then if you really, really are wealthy, then you go to your private schools and they can cost 10, 20, $1,000 per student per year, and a whole lot more. I've heard as high as $50,000. All of our children stand a chance to get a good education, regardless of the family's financial status. And this comes most natural with a church model. It can be done in patron and hybrid schools, but it takes a lot more conscientious effort. It's something that you have to work hard on because, and we'll get into why a little bit, but the patron-ran schools, I mean, if they have to come up with the money somewhere, so you're asking it out of the patrons a lot of times right in the middle of their earning years. Psalms 127, 3 to 5 says this, "Lo, children are a heritage of the Lord, and the fruit of the womb is his reward. As arrows are in the hand of a mighty man, so are the children of the youth. Happy is the man that hath his quiver full of them, and they shall not be ashamed, but they shall speak with the enemies in the gate." I believe that the people here believe this, and I'm thankful that they tend to structure their schools in a way that supports families, possibly even large families. That is a blessing. So the next question is how to share the financial burden. Some of this is, I've come to conclude that there's basically, for a church or a hybrid church school, there's basically three streams of income, and I want to talk about them each. The first is, it is an opportunity for the wealthy to share. There's a piece of us that doesn't even want to talk about that. We're proud people, or we can be, without God's grace. But the fact of the matter is, it takes the wealthy amongst us. In Nehemiah 7, verses 70 to 72, was a time, it was after Nehemiah was done building the wall, and they counted the people, and then they kind of took up an offering. And in that time frame, it gives record of the offering that was given. And it talks about two different groups of people. It says the chief of the fathers, and then the people. And I don't know how many people was in that group of chief of the fathers. I don't know if it was 5 or if it was 10. But the chief of the fathers brought about as much money as the rest of the people. It's just a fact. If you are blessed this morning and you're a part of the wealthy, just thank the Lord. He's given it to you for a reason. And it is one opportunity for the wealthy to give equality in their community, to help with this, everyone's child getting a good education. The next thing that we've talked, I've heard this throughout, you know, as I was younger, and it's give throughout your whole life. This is one of the benefits of a church school. You start giving whenever you first start earning money. You give the whole way through your earning years, and then as a grandpa, you just keep on giving. Another person, a person that I talked to about this too, he admitted to me, their church was a church-ran school. He admitted, he said, when I was in, you know, had children in school, he says, I was not pulling my weight. And then he was happy to tell me, and it wasn't boastful, but he's happy. He says, I think I've paid my way now. So he's an older man. His children are through. He has grandchildren. Yeah, he's happy to do that. Then you have the give to cover your costs as you go. We'll talk about a little bit more about how to encourage that later. But this is specifically for high-income families. It is really difficult if the cost per child comes out for someone that has, say, 5 children to $15,000 a year. If a person's only making $35,000, $45,000, it's really, really difficult for them to do that. So this is not a something that anyone needs shame over. There are some people who can really kick in and cover their costs as they go, and then there's others who cannot. I have a little bit of a challenge for the ministers here, though. If you're a minister and you preach on giving, it is not hard at all to convince grandpas to continue giving. They've seen the benefit of their children, and they've seen the benefit of their maybe grandchildren who are in school. The difficult one is try to convince young people to prepay. If you can convince and place a vision in young people's hearts to prepay for their child education, they're not even dating, they're not even married, and they have no children, but they're prepaying. That's a challenge, but it can be done. I've heard testimony of, you know, people who have not made much money. Maybe they're still in school, but their parents are teaching them to give to the school offering. So, wow, this sounds all glorious and equitable. Everything's just flowing along. The rich are giving. All the money's just flowing everywhere. Unfortunately, we have freeloaders. It's one of the challenges of the offering-only type of situations. And I'm not referring to families who are poor, who have financial struggles, not referring to any of that. My heart goes out to them. There are just some unfortunate situations. It's not at all what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people who could support, but who fail to see the value, and maybe they're just plain tight and greedy. Sometimes you got to call it what it is. But I have news. They're still brothers and sisters in the Lord. Never give up. Keep encouraging. Keep talking. The Holy Spirit, the brotherhood, people do bend. It may take a while, but people do bend. And maybe, just maybe, you won't capture their heart while they're children in school. Maybe you'll capture it later, whenever they're grandpas. And they finally could look back and say, you know what? There was value there. I did freeload. I should be giving more. And they'll make effort to do something about that. The last thing I have is about gatekeeping. If you are a patron or a hybrid school, you have a gatekeeping question. I think Linford's going to talk about this a fair amount this afternoon, who should be in your school and who shouldn't be. And if I won't say much about it, but if you have a patron or a church or a hybrid school, there will be a gate. There'll be different sizes and there'll be different shapes, but there will be a gate. And my only encouragement to you is affordability is only one part of the equation. Make sure you don't just take in patrons because you feel like they can really financially benefit your organization. Okay, some ideas about filling your budget. Information, information, information. I don't have a lot of rocket science, like I said, or to give you. But if I had any two super tips, it'd be these. Get your information out regularly and consistently and in a useful manner. And then second of all, know your cost per child. And that's important because the people who are in your patron body who would like to pay as they go must know what the cost per child is. They're not on the school board. They don't see the bills. They don't see the budget. There's no way for them to know. And if you're doing these two ideas already, then you're probably just right in there. It's going well probably for you, hopefully. If you're not, that is my recommendation, to know your cost per child. I'm going to give you a real simple slide here to how to figure that out, and we'll go from there. So in my example here, you want to pull up a profit and loss of last year's expenses. In my example here, we had $95,000 worth of expenses. Then I would encourage you to add for all your estimated extra costs. This could be teacher raises. Maybe you need some new desk. I will tell you this. In all of the way we do this here, we do maintenance on the building, but it does exclude large capital improvements. So we don't want to inflate those numbers too badly. Add your extra costs. And then my encouragement also is if you're always running out of money, add some cushion. Now, you might want to space that over a couple years. Maybe it's too much to add in for 1 year. But add some cushion. It's not fair to your trust treasure to have to, the last minute, run around and pick up offering money and all that just so that the paychecks can go out. Get a little bit of money in your bank account if you can. So add a little bit of cushion if you need. In our example, we have a $105,000 budget. You divide it by your future enrollment because we've added expenses for them of 35, and it comes up to an estimated cost of $3,500 per student. Be honest with your people. This is a budgeted cost per student, and I like to use that word budgeted. You won't know the true cost until the year's over. It may go just as you planned, but it may not. We actually charge tuition here, at least for our families some. It's not full tuition, but it's partially tuition. So when we send out our tuition bill every year, your first line is your tuition bill, and then from there we say, this is your cost per child for this year, and to use this as a guide for your giving. So if you have four students, we'd actually just tell them that. It's going to be $14,000 in our example. A while back, I did a little bit of a talk for our church about finances, and I added up the cost of $3,500, I think it was, by 12 years, and it comes out to $42,000 to educate a child from grade 1 to grade 12. That was a shocking number to me. I mean, you hear the $3,500, but when you multiply it out, and it's not to shock people, but it is what it is, and so people need to know that if they want to give. I believe in miracles from God, but if you don't put any information out and you still get your money in, God bless you, but I would think that that the more information you can give them, the better off you'll be. The second thing I would do is I would set giving goals for your church. In this example, again, moving on, we've had a $105,000 school budget. We have $35,000 coming in from our tuition, needing $70,000. Give them that number, $5,833.03 in this case. Put it in written record would be my recommendation. Get it in your bulletin, and I'm terrible for this, that Sunday before the school offering comes around, and too often I have people asking me, like, where's the information at? They're wanting to get it in there. But it does help. It gives a consistent giving goal. And I guess I was talking about before, the person who had to get up every month and talk about the low money. If you have giving goals and the information is in your bulletin, you shouldn't have to get up and stand up and tell people that. It's very, very obvious. You're either ahead or you're behind. Unless, of course, something desperate happens, like the furnace blows up or something. This is how I'd recommend putting in your bulletin. It's very simple. I would give them what we've received. This is an example of this is month six. This is what we've received. This is what we budgeted. Everyone knows you're behind. Doesn't need any further saying. I also would not recommend, if you're using a system like this, of putting your balance in the school, in the bulletin, your bank account balance for the school. We've done that probably before when it's really, really bad. It's kind of like a second nudge that we're really out of money. But because balances ebb and flow. If the tuition comes in early, you're going to have plenty of money. But that money still needs to be coming in on a consistent basis from your monthly budget. Changing gears here. If I say fundraisers, this is exactly what happens to some people. They tend to be extremely divisive. Some are against it. Others just love it. They love the pulse. They love the events. They love the planning. They love everything about it. There's so many different types of fundraisers. Schools auctions, dinners, craft sales, pizza fundraisers. Our local youth group here wanted to raise some money, so they sold, delivered, and in some cases installed mulch. There's benefits of every kind. They can make up substantial amounts of budget, too. I've heard of large schools bringing $120,000 to $140,000. There's many that are much smaller. But it's going to take a lot of this. Don't let that discourage you, though, but don't be fooled about the amount of effort they take. They will take organizations. They will take teams. This can be a positive thing, though, too. You can draw communities together in a way. I believe that our community and planning for this has been impacted in a positive way. People working together that maybe they don't normally. This is not a fundraiser, but I was using that as an example. Critics might ask, Why not just work a little more? If everyone would just take another couple Saturdays and work them, and then donate the money, we'd be at the same place. And I hear the argument. It's maybe not complete. There's other aspects of it too. Some people have more time than they have available resources to make money. There's also tax benefits to the donors. People can get rid of merchandise maybe that they wanted to, slow moving. Manufacturers can donate stuff that they've made error on. There's all types of things. So just giving a few principles now about a fundraiser if you want to run a fundraiser. Remember, it's your children, it's your school. It's not your neighbor's problem. It's not your friends, your co-workers. It's not their job to educate your child. So make sure that if you're doing a fundraiser of some sort, it's offering excellent value. You want to make money, but there's a lot more than that to it. Avoid setups that lead to giving alms before men. We've all heard the classic story of the pie that sold for $500 and someone says, sell it again. So they sell it again. Straight up, pretty much giving alms before men. Avoid those. That takes some effort sometimes. My last point is be sensitive to your community. I do not say this to roll my community under the bus at all, but I've asked around a little bit and I know that our community is not really pro-school auction. For whatever reason, it may be a deep-seated culture issue. We just are not really fond of like public school auctions. There may be other things that we can do though. Maybe we would be into doing a dinner. Maybe we'd be into nothing. That's a possibility too. But my one thought is instead of plowing ahead with whatever that you know that could totally offend your community and your culture, ask the question, I wonder if there's any kind of fundraiser that we could do and that our community would support it. You might find out there is or there is not. So what's all this talk about money and money for your school budget? Well, for me, it boils down to one thing. Small budgets equals small payroll. And since I'm not a school employee, I can talk about this. Remember what I said about money and oxygen and air? That applies to teachers too. And there's too often that our teachers are spending way too much time thinking about how to stretch their budgets, how to make this all work on the livelihood that we've given them. So just a few thoughts about that. Market wage versus living wage. The market wage right now is absolutely through the roof. I do not expect anyone here is paying their teachers a market wage. Tell me I'm wrong afterwards. I'd be glad to hear about it. My concern is more that we're giving them a living wage. I do want to be fair to this topic, though. There are times when we have younger students, younger teachers. Maybe there's times that your school even views it as a VS opportunity. I'm not downplaying that one bit, but I do want you to think about that just a little bit fairly. If we would send a young person to the foreign mission field in a third world country, they might have to pay to get there, but then once they're there, they'd have their gas, their food, their shelter all covered. They're just there working. When we ask a teacher to come from another state and move into our area, what are we asking of them, especially if the pay is not great? Are we asking them to live on nothing, live on their savings? Just be considered, even if you consider it almost a VS opportunity. The big question that I have has more when it switches from those type of opportunities to where we're asking people to become career teachers. We want people to stay for decades if we can. How do you come to this conclusion? I admit these conversations can be awkward on the school board. Sometimes there's employers and employees all on the same school board. You have business owners, you have day wage earners. It's not easy. But one question you can start with is, could you live on that wage? That would be a very good place to start. A second one would be, is there any hope that this person could purchase a house? What about money for emergencies or large or car home repairs? Vehicle replacement. I have no desire to be a teacher. I'll admit that right up front. And I just think it's absolutely terrible when I hear that someone quit teaching because they could no longer afford to teach any longer. It is a very sad day. And I really, their budgets just wouldn't work. And that's a terrible feeling. They're terrible hard to come by, teachers that want to teach and are career teachers. It's just a terrible feeling in my heart. This is the crowd that can do something about it. So that's my encouragement to you. Make sure your teachers are making living wages. I apologize for my worldly and casual minister there. But if you're an ordained person and you are here today, you have a special place on your board. Most of our boards are made up of lay people. They can talk, they can philosophize about how all this should work, but at the end of the day, you are the one who God has called to preach to your people and to your body. So my question is, how are you supporting your board? Or have you preached a message recently on giving? Have you thought about how the school finances work and maybe laid out a case for your people? It's your job. And maybe if it don't feel like it's your job, maybe it's you should nudge someone else on your minister team. But likely, you are the connection here between these lay member school people and the ministry who are doing the preaching. So make sure you're doing your job. One warning I would give you just a little wee bit. I talked a lot about cost per student. And I do believe that that's an important number to get out. But make sure you don't wield that as a sword. It is a good number to know. If someone can't, don't want to make anyone feel bad about it. And the second thing it can actually do is if a person is wealthy and they could get more, they might feel satisfied that they gave their share. So just be careful how you push. We want people to give because the Lord has freely given to us. Four goals for this talk. Number one, that God would be glorified through our school finances. I really hope more information makes it into your supporters' hands. And I really, really hope there's some raises handed out in the next year or so. And then that the ordained people would give more messages supporting our schools. Well, it's pretty much lunchtime or really, really close to that. So I have a slide here for some talking points about lunch. Ask the people across you, how's your school start structured and what's working for you? Does your community do fundraisers and what has been most successful? And then how does your board determine what is a living wage? And I hope there can be some lively debate about that, and maybe some change could be made in your school finances if it's needed. Well, that's it. You have been very generous with your attention. I thank you for your time, and may God bless you as you work through Money Matters.